It's been over a decade since American troops first entered into combat in the areas that we call Kuwait and Iraq. I believe it was in 1991, it might have been 92, an Army sergeant by the name of Steve Tully took the group of men that he was in charge of and went on a scouting mission through the sands of southern Iraq. They didn't expect to, but on that mission they did encounter an enemy confrontation. Sergeant Steve Tully, knowing that they were outmanned, knew, however, that he had the assurance that artillery and low-level bombing was available to him. He simply had to call it in. He got his radio master and they called in the coordinates and were about to get relief. They looked up into the sky and they saw the planes coming. That's the last thing they saw. A mistake in the coordinates caused the bombs to land not on the Iraqi troops, but on Sergeant Steve Tully and the 15 to 20 men that were under his command. Hit by enemy fire, by friendly fire. Well, I believe the Bible speaks about friendly fire. It calls it stumbling blocks. Ever been hit by friendly fire? Ever pulled the trigger? Paul, writing to the Romans in chapter 14, verse 13, says that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. Now those words were written to the church. Therefore, I conclude those words were written to you and I. They're words that we need to consider. Because I believe one of our great Christian duties is to build up and not tear down. When I hear of the church being in crisis, I just have to look at people like you. I believe the Scriptures teach us to live lives that encourage, not live lives that discourage. And there is nothing more graphic, nothing more obvious nor more odious than when we become a stumbling block to another. Our subject tonight is the tongue, bitter or sweet. I doubt there's hardly anybody here over the age of 5 or 6 that hasn't heard time after time the little ditty. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I've never met a person to whom that is consistently true. If I want to hurt you, the quickest, the easiest, and the most deadly way to do it is with my words. And if you want to hurt me, the quickest, the easiest, and the most deadly way for you to do it is with your words. More accurately, that ditty maybe should go, sticks and stones do hurt my bones and words may scar forever. A hostile intent or a disapproving tone do crush and make me feel alone. In every workplace, in every home, in every social relationship, criticism is a fact of life. Lyndon Johnson once said during his presidency when he felt besieged, he said, I could quote with exact accuracy the 23rd Psalm, and they would still criticize me. George Washington was often hissed and booed as he drove down the streets. Every president has been vilified, disparaged, belittled, ridiculed, and scorned. And the same, unfortunately, filters down to most human relationships. When we consider the tongue, you know exactly one of the clarion scriptures we need to examine tonight. It's found in James chapter 3. And in the first two verses, he simply says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we will receive the greater condemnation, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend, not in word, the same is perfect, and able also to bridle the whole body." James shows us that one of the most frequent stumbling blocks, even in the church, are words. He warns us, don't clamor to speak, because when you do, a responsibility is thrust upon you. And words bring judgment. In a little hamlet of a swistle in the English countryside, in a churchyard, stands a drab, gray slab tombstone with a faint etching that reads as follows. "Beneath this stone, a lump of clay, lies Arabella Young, who on the 24th of May began to hold her tongue." You know somebody like that? That it's going to take death. It's going to take death. All of us probably have known and can think of people to which we think that epitaph would probably be appropriate. Just change the name and just change the dates. The Bible says, and nature teaches us, that one, the tongue is a movable muscular structure attached to the floor of the mouth that has the possibility to ruin character, break friendships, blacken people, and send them to their death. But the Bible and nature also teaches that it has the power to bless and the power to encourage. Because the tongue is simply a messenger boy. It carries the thoughts in our hearts to the world, to our families, to our brothers and sisters. Therefore, the problem really doesn't lie with the tongue, does it? No, the problem lies with the heart. The tongue is just the most frequent window to our hearts. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 2, Solomon writes, "The tongue of the wise uses knowledge right, but the mouth of a fool pours out foolishness." You see, the tongue is both good and bad. It's both bitter and sweet. It's not an either or, it's which we're using it for at a particular moment. Many of the Proverbs have to do with the tongue. Proverbs 10:31, the tongue brings forth wisdom, wise counsel, sound advice. Proverbs 12:15, it's a vehicle for wise counsel. Proverbs 15:22, it clarifies plans. We talked in my class this afternoon, those of you who were with us, about emotion. One of the things that I do get a little bit emotional about is thinking about those wise brothers and sisters who earlier in my life sent wise counsel in my direction through their tongues. And I will be eternally grateful to them. Many of them are dead by now. One so unworthy, receiving wise counsel through the vehicle of the tongue. Seasoned veterans of the faith Let me admonish, let me plead with all of us. When we are around seasoned brothers and sisters of the faith, don't talk, just listen. And a lot of wise counsel will be learned. We're told also in Scriptures that the tongue is used to reprove and to rebuke. And again in Proverbs 15 and 5, we're admonished to listen to reproof. Listen to reproof. Wouldn't it be wonderful if nobody ever criticized us? Or would it? Would it? If nobody ever picked at our faults, wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, it has an appealing nature to it, but what kind of monsters would we become? Is my question. Most of us might be delighted to live our lives without any reproofs. But the Bible tells me that's one of the dominant ways that we get wise, that we grow up. It needs to be given with love, of course. But it's usually given vis-a-vis the tongue. You and I have received many compliments in our lives. But if you're like me, you can remember almost down to every single rebuke and reproof you've ever received. They stick with you, don't they? I have learned more from people that rebuke me than those who compliment me. I don't enjoy them as much, but I learn more from them. The tongue is used for encouragement. What we're doing in these 2 weeks is largely vis-a-vis the tongue. If none of the exhorters had tongues, I guess we could use modern technology and communicate a lesson, but it would be a much different meaning or meeting, wouldn't it? But the tongue is also a holder of a great pouch of poison, isn't it? As the poet wrote, "My diet is balanced, my food is the best, but it's the words that I've eaten that are hard to digest." Apparently, James was concerned about this. Some scattered Christians beginning to use the instrument intended for praise, for teaching, for exhortation, we're beginning to use it as an instrument of destruction. And he tells us in the third chapter of James that each one of us have a powerful influence on others. If you're like me, you wish you didn't influence others. But it's not a choice we have. It's just a fact of life. The greater knowledge you possess, and the Bible urges us to increase our knowledge, but the greater knowledge we possess brings a greater responsibility. A responsibility to teach using the tongue. A responsibility to encourage using the tongue. In Matthew chapter 18, verse 6, it talks about our responsibility to the young. Someday, you and I we'll have to give an account for how we've used the tongue to influence people. Because it influences many. The tongue also indicates maturity or the lack of. James says if you don't stumble in word, it's a sign of maturity. In the King James that I read to you, it says the same as a perfect man, telios. Complete is the thought. Mature. I mentioned this in my class. I repeat it tonight. Spiritual maturity is not seen in the speaking in tongues, but rather in the controlling of the tongue. And therefore, as God's people, we're to use our tongues in a godly way. You know, we go along pretty well sometimes. And that outflows from our mouth, maybe at work, maybe at home, I hope not at the church, outflows from our mouth a string of startling words. And we wonder, where did they come from? Well, they came from the heart. But maturity helps minimize that. Godly men and godly women give great attention to the words that they use, especially when they're under fire and under pressure. I think that's one of the tremendous marks of a good leader. It's a tremendous mark of a good elder. The ability to even control their tongue under pressure. People like to follow people that are in control when times are hard. That's what we look for, and I think that's what the Bible teaches us. But James also says controlling the tongue is going to be probably for most of us the single most difficult thing we will ever try to do. A lot of our Christian walk is, I think, relatively easy. Not all of it, but relatively easy. But for none is the tongue easy. You realize we focus on James chapter 3, but James mentions the tongue in every single chapter of his book. Just bear with me. James chapter 1, verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Verse 26. If any man among you be religious and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. James chapter 2. Verse 12, so speak ye and so do as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. James chapter 3, I hope you understand that. James chapter 4, verse 11, speak not evil one to another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law. James chapter 5, verse 12, but above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven nor by earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, your nay be nay, lest you fall into condemnation. How many times do you think James mentions this issue in this short little book? Well, it sure transcends chapter 3. There are many people in the Bible, and this is one of the wonderful things about the Bible, it is just bluntly honest about us. There are many people in the Bible that had trouble with their tongue. Psalms 106 tells us that Moses spake unadvisedly with his lips. Job chapter 40, verse 4, talks about putting a hand over his mouth. Isaiah chapter 6 talks about Isaiah's uncleaned lips, and it's the placing of the coal on Isaiah's lips in chapter 6 that seems to be the ultimate preparation for him to be a spokesperson for God. Peter, we know him so well. The first part in the Gospels, it seems like the only time Peter opened his mouth was to change feet. Once the Holy Spirit came in Acts chapter 2, we see a different man, don't we? And James gives us wonderful illustrations here. Four of them, in fact, in the third chapter. The horse and the bridle, the ship, the rudder, the fire and the spark, the animal and the trainer. All giving us examples of how a little thing can control a big thing. And then warning us about the power of the tongue. In the 8th through the 12th verses of James chapter 3, we begin to get a glimpse of the poison of the tongue. But the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. He's saying, how in the world can the same instrument curse men and bless God? That's a pretty good question, isn't it? It's a pretty good question. It becomes a deadly poison. It becomes a stumbling block. Blessing and cursing out of the same mouth is the ultimate of duplicity. curse men that are made in God's image? Not very godly, is it? Well, brothers and sisters, this is not the way it ought to be. And James makes that very clear to us. I was reading an article the other day with this talk in mind, and a man discussed about how he handled people when he would get phone calls, and it would start out, I want to tell you something. He said, what I've learned to do is, he would say, is it okay if I write this down or record it? And he said, you'd be amazed how much that shortened our conversations. How many times we start sentences with, I should tell you this, but. Well, you're on the right track. You shouldn't tell me this. So don't. How does poison work with our tongues? How do our tongues sometimes become a stumbling block? What is the cyanide that spews out of our mouths sometimes? Well, the Bible gives us a lot of examples of that. Time's not going to permit me to go into them in great deal. But one of them is gossip. In Proverbs chapter 16, verse 27, it says, an ungodly man digs up evil, and it is on his lips like a burning fire. He digs it up, it's on his lips, it's just too hot to hold, so he spews it all over. Proverbs 26:20, where there is no talebearer or gossiper, strife ceases. How many congregations would be stronger today? How many families would be stronger today if people simply kept their mouths shut on certain issues? Morgan Blake wrote a little prose riddle that goes like this. He says, I am more deadly than a screaming shell of a howitzer. I win without killing. I tear down homes. I break hearts. I wreck lives. I travel on the wings of the wind. No innocence is strong enough to intimidate me. No purity strong enough to daunt me. I have no regard for the truth, no respect for justice, no mercy for the defenseless. My victims are as numerous as the sands of the sea and often as innocent. I never forget, I seldom forgive, and my name is gossip. But we in the church don't gossip. We just share. We have prayer requests. I'm not at all against sharing people that need prayer. But maybe we don't need to share all of the details we know about why they need the prayer. Sometimes that's appropriate, but sometimes it's inappropriate. Out of the mouth flows poison. I think the question we need to know before we speak to one another about a lot of issues is, do they need to know? We've got a lot of godly leaders here tonight, elders, deacons, evangelists. And I would almost say without any hesitation, most if not all of them, and some of the rest of you, know enough about your home congregation that if you spewed it all out, you could destroy the whole congregation. It's called discernment. It's called discretion. John Dryden, a 17th century poet, says, There is a lust in man no charm can tame, of loudly publishing his neighbor's shame. So on eagle's wings immortal scandals fly, while virtuous actions are but born and then die. Why is it so much more enjoyable for us to share the juicy morsels than the uplifting, encouraging things? Some of you are very, very talented in your ability to articulate words. And that is absolutely wonderful. But let me tell you, that is a tremendous responsibility because you have a loaded howitzer in your pocket and you could just destroy families, churches, and people. A blessing or a curse? Not only is gossip something that we need to look at, flattery, I think, is also something I would call your attention to. And there is a difference between gossip and flattery. Gossip is when we say behind someone's back what we wouldn't say to their face. Flattery is when we say something to their face that we wouldn't say behind their back. Gossip is when we talk about people behind their back. Flattery is when we kind of lie to them to their face. And we don't always do this intentionally, but we need to be careful about this. Now, if I say we shouldn't flatter people, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be tactful about it. Husbands, if your wife comes in and says, there's a commercial out, I just saw it the other day. I don't know if I can get this right, but I'm going to try because it's a good one. She walks in the room and she says, honey, does this dress make me look fat? He says, it sure does. And you can just see the marriage counselors lining up at the door. You know, there is a place for tact. But flattery is the manipulation of people by telling them things that really aren't true to get them to do the things you want them to do. And I think that's a poison of the tongue. Just as wrong as gossip. In fact, Solomon agrees with me because he wrote in Proverbs 26, 28, a flattering mouth works ruin. What about criticism? It seems to me that some people believe their purpose on life is to criticize. They're born to do it, and they're only happy when they do it. I had a brother tell me about a month ago in a different state that he thought his talent that God had given him was to criticize people to get them to straighten up. Well, there may be times to rebuke and to reprove, but isn't that a terrible life to think that that is your reason for existing? It's tough to deal with people like that. People that seldom make a positive comment. I believe contentious tongues have hindered the work of the Lord 1,000 times. Critical tongues have closed church doors. Careless tongues have broken hearts, broken minds, and broken spirits. And critics often speak with little understanding of the hurt they cause. Critics are not required to be smart. It is not a job requirement of a critic to be intelligent. Just verbose. Albert Einstein said, against every great and noble effort stand 1,000,000 mediocre minds. Fault finders come in with an array of excuses. And then they cover it up with things like, well, I was just trying to help. Well, I didn't really mean it. Well, it was just a joke. Boy, you're awfully thin-skinned. And you know, for some reason, we sometimes tend to be the most critical of those that we love the most. They've done studies. Most men treat their secretaries with more courtesy than they do their wives. And most wives, so that we are even here, treat the man at the grocery store with more courtesy than sometimes they do their husbands. I don't think that's true of the majority here, but it is something for us to ponder. But that's somewhat understandable because those are the people we spend the most time with. Those are the people that we know. Shortly after a young couple was married, the husband decided to be honest with his wife. And he said, would you mind if I pointed out a few faults that I noticed but didn't want to tell you before we got married? And she said, no, I wouldn't mind it at all because those are the very faults that kept me from getting a better husband in the first place. You know, you can play that game any way you want. And there's a lot of truth to it, isn't there? But sometimes because of the closeness of our relationships, and we are very close, not just in our physical families with our brothers and sisters. I'm very close to many of you, but sometimes in our closeness, we can throw caution to the wind. Sometimes a tad prematurely. And in the process, if we're not careful, we will alienate, misunderstand, resent, distance, become a stumbling block. And how do we handle it when someone is honest with us? How many times have you heard someone say, "Well, I really want you to be honest with me"? You take a deep breath when somebody says that. It's occasionally it's true, but usually it's really not. This factors into how do we discuss weaknesses with a brother or a sister? How do we allow them to discuss them with us? That takes a lot of trust, doesn't it? But I think it's a godly way. The Bible assumes that correction is going to be essential for all of us, in the home, in our relationships. That's why in Hebrews 12, verses 6 and 7, it talks about the Lord loving, chastening. And there are legitimate times when that needs to be done. But when it needs to be done, all of us would benefit by adhering to this simple admonition. We all need to have thicker skins and softer hearts. Most of us have thick hearts and thin skin. And that's not to our advantage. But sometimes criticism can reach such a level that I don't even want to call it criticism anymore. I'm going to call it character assassination. It's the premeditated use of the tongue to destroy somebody else. And I pray that none of us have ever done that, and I pray that none of us ever have it done to us. In Psalm 64, the first few verses, David says, "Hear my voice, O God, in my prayer. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity." Listen to this. "Who whet their tongues like a sword, who bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in evil matter. They commune of lying snares privily. They say, who shall see them? They search out iniquities. They accomplish a diligent search, both inward thought of every one of them, and the heart is deep." The use of the tongue. Galatians, Paul writes in Galatians 5:15 about the brethren biting and devouring themselves. I want to share with you what I think is one of the great examples, great in terms of vivid, examples in nature of how this can work in a very tragic way. It's rather gruesome, but I think it's vivid. The female spider in nature is often a widow for an embarrassing reason. The female spider often eats those who come her way. Lonely suitors, visitors alike, quickly become corpses in the dining room of a female spider. Her dining room, as one man wrote, becomes a morgue. A visiting fly, having been captured in her web, will appear as we look at it to be whole. But the spider has drunk the insides out of that fly. And so he's become his own hollow casket. The reason for that is that the spider has no stomach. Therefore, a spider can't eat like most animals or insects do. Rather, the spider makes teeny punctures on the outside of the prey and ingests her digestive juices into the corpse of her prey so that his insides are broken down and turned into a warm soup. She then drinks that soup up through her tentacles. When I read that for the first time, I thought, isn't that sometimes the way people treat each other? The writer of this goes on and makes the point. Much like men swirl the souls of others after they've been broken down with various enzymes of guilt, humiliation, and cruelty. There are a number of effective acidic measures, and some of us are so skilled with the hypodermic word or the tongue that our dear ones still sit up, they still smile as if they're quite alive after we've sucked the very life out of them and left them for dead. Now, I don't take credit for that thought. It comes from a book entitled The Rag Man and Other Cries of Faith by Walter Wandrum. But I think he makes a vivid illustration. You know people that have had the life sucked out of them by somebody else's words? Ever felt like the life's been sucked out of you because of somebody else's tongue? Perhaps it's been done to you. I don't know. Worse yet, perhaps you've done it to somebody else. The sting of the tongue, the poison arrows that literally destroy. James says, you must not allow that to happen. You've got to control it. Else it would be better that a millstone were hung around your neck and you'd be thrown into the sea. Every time we're tempted to destroy somebody with our tongues, we had better stop and consider James's words. How can we sing praises one minute and curse the next? If we ever find ourselves doing that, when our parents were teaching us how to navigate the town, they would say, stop, look, and listen. That's still pretty good advice for us. As I close, I found another interesting article or reference to an article. The September 1995 issue of National Geographic. And in this article, it told about a special trait that the human mouth and the human tongue have. That's the ability to heal itself and other parts of the body. Scientists have discovered, apparently, there is a natural antibiotic in our tongues called lingual antimicrobial peptide. And those of you that are still in chemistry and biology, all those words will make sense to you. Lingual antimicrobial peptide. We constantly take all sorts of potentially harmful microorganisms and viruses into our mouths. However, God apparently has given us, so that our bodies can ward off most of those harmful organisms, this particular antibody. Our tongues are therefore often antibiotic. That's why in the animal kingdom, they lick their wounds. We tend not to do that because we have other options and we can't reach a lot of them. But in a spiritual sense, I think that may be what James is also telling us about when he says the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set amongst our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. But the Bible also says that we can use our tongues to speak those things which are good for necessary edification and that will impart grace to the hearers, Ephesians 4:29. The difference is not, however, brothers and sisters, in the tongue, but in how we use it. God has given us a tongue to be a healer and not a destroyer. But how we use our tongues depends upon our hearts. A gun can be used for hunting food, or it can be used to murder. The internet can be used to share and gain valuable information, or it can be used as a means to satisfy worldly lusts. Almost anything can be used for either good or evil, depending upon the intent of the person using it. Jesus therefore said in Matthew 12:35, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, but an evil man out of the evil treasures brings forth evil things. The tongue, bitter or sweet? Well, the tongue can be used to share the gospel, as we're talking about in one of our classes, or it can be used to teach false doctrine. It can be used to express hateful anger, or it can be used to quiet someone else's wrath. It can be used to lie about someone, or it can be used to tell the truth. It can be used to start rumors, or it can be used to quiet rumors. It can be used to hurt people, it can be used to heal people. It all depends on our hearts. So we're left with the question that only we can answer for ourselves. Do we use the tongue to heal hurts or to cause them? Is our heart what it should be before the Lord? Well, if it's not, it will first manifest itself probably in the tongue. And your tongue is the window to your heart. I believe God has given us a tongue to heal, to encourage, to exhort, not to tear down, and not to harm. And we are left with the question, are we using it as God intended for it to? I don't think there's anybody here tonight that doesn't intend to use their tongue in a godly way. But I don't think there's anybody here tonight that doesn't understand how difficult that is for us sometimes to do. Bitter or sweet? We get to choose, don't we? We're going to close our thoughts tonight and extend the gospel invitation.